HRNradio.com, where positive people and podcasts unite.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. We never have normal conversations, so come and enjoy all the things that we share because we're not afraid to talk about them. And I always say that if I experience something, I know it's the truth because I lived it. So I don't let beliefs block me. We're going to talk today to Candace Talmadge. She and Janice Simons wrote a book called The Afterlife Healing Circle. And it's about more than just that, because something that, to quote a paragraph from Candace, this book makes no claim to offer any proof of the existence of life beyond the physical. Instead, its purpose is to help people resolve their grief or calm their anxieties about becoming parents by teaching a specific healing method. Research is beyond the scope of this book and beside the point, too. The stories do suggest that after-death contact and before-birth contact, too, have distinct emotional benefits beyond what is available through traditional talk therapy, self-help groups, or psychotropic drugs. And Candace, before I say go to you, one of the things I was thinking about were some of the ultrasounds of infants in the uterus and how they responded to the parents. In other words, if the parents are having an argument, the kid was frantic all over the place. And if they were playing quiet music, how peaceful the child was. And that if they played certain music and read certain, you know, children's stories before the child was born, after it was born, the children, the infants, would relax and be calm when they read those stories or played that music. So it's obvious the communication is going on all the time. And I have to add, from my own personal experiences, choking to death as a four-year-old, obviously it was a near-death experience, I know what it's like to be out of my body and even to have a past life experience when someone said, why are you living this life? I went into a trance. So to me, it's the word consciousness, that our consciousness does not rely on our body, and so that it continues. And I think as time goes by, we'll begin to understand all of these. But more important is what you said about a healing method. So tell us more about what your aim is and what you're trying to have happen.
Well, first, Bernie and Deb, thank you for allowing me to be a guest on your show. And my aim is simple. Just as I needed and still need healing, I know how valuable and important it can be to making life worth living. And that is the point of the books that I write, the nonfiction and the fiction, and of what I do as a healer, all right? I try to offer hope. I try to offer something that will help resolve pain, whether that pain is emotional or in some other part of the whole self. Resolution is truly important because it allows people to move into a new space that's more comfortable, more free, to be more at peace with themselves. All right, we all, you know, wish peace on the world. At this time of year, I would offer this observation that unless we are at peace with ourselves, there will be no peace in the world. Mm-hmm. People who make war on other people are at war within themselves.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, something I'm always repeating, because when you talk about parenting, that if you're rejected by your parents, you want revenge. And that's what we read about. You know, we're all, not we, but I mean, all those who are out there killing are taking revenge. I mean, it's like killing their parents over and over again and taking it out on others. But if you grow up with love and what I call a reverence for life, you'd never behave that way because of how you feel about yourself and living things.
Well, I'd like to offer this, that from my own experience and the experience of my energy healing clients. Your parents can love you to the best of their ability, but if you cannot let that love in, and there are specific reasons that you cannot, then you will feel unloved even though you grow up loved, all right? Because love is both a giving and a receiving. Most of us have problems receiving love, allowing it in, allowing it to touch our hearts. So we feel unloved. We feel unworthy. We feel angry that we feel like we are rejected when in fact we are not rejected, but we cannot feel what is offered, or what is offered, the love that is offered, does not feel like our understanding of love. Because each person has a unique ability to receive love and understanding of love. And I definitely believe in multiple lifetimes. And one of the things that we come here, or in any space, I consider this a multiverse, so there are many ways and spaces to be. We are trying to grow in our efforts to love and be loved. We all crave love. We all want it. But many of us, even if it sort of came up and knocked us on the forehead, we still wouldn't let it in. So part of my healing, and part of what the healing circle is designed to facilitate at the beginning stages, is allowing that love to come in, whether that's the love of a person who is deceased or the love of a child about to be born. And because there is a group of people from between 4 to 8 in this healing circle, It is magnified. In the Gospels, Jesus talks about whenever 2 or more of you are gathered in my name. What he was saying is about the beneficial effects of group energy in magnifying love. And that allows the communication between those who are in a physical body and those who are not in a physical body. It magnifies it and supports it and makes it clear. It's sort of an amplifier, if you will. But everybody benefits. I totally agree, Bernie, that only when you experience something can you accept it as your personal truth, or at least something that happened to you and have it make sense. Experience is the key, and that's what the Afterlife Healing Circle is. It is definitely an experience.
But, I mean, it's hard for me to accept what you're saying about not letting love in. Why should a child not let love in?
Well, because I don't believe that we come in as clean slates. You know, that to me is one of the myths of the
right.
So-called enlightenment. I believe we bring with us baggage and issues in the form of self-judgments from many, many lifetimes, many, many existences. And when we come in, we generally try to choose both a purpose, something that resonates with us that we want to pursue, which could be general. It could just be to teach, to heal, to express love, to do whatever, okay? We also choose a few lessons. Most of us tend to bite off more than we can chew. And one of these lessons could possibly be to learn to love ourselves.
All right, but let me interrupt a minute and put it this way. It may take time to let the love in.
Yes, it may.
You know, because I learned as a physician that there were self-destructive people who were used to rejection, and it just proved that they weren't worth anything or worth loving. And I chose to love them and continue to see them no matter how they behaved. And ultimately, with time, they began to let my love in and begin to love themselves.
Right. In essence, the whole purpose of why we're here is we are loved, but we're here to feel the love from different experiences. That's the way I look at it.
I can't argue with that. You're preaching to the choir here.
Yes.
I mean, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross years ago said it very simply. She said, love is giving with no expectations.
Mm.
So the person doesn't have to accept your love, but that doesn't stop you from giving. And what I have found is, literally, I tell people with alcoholic abusive parents, tell them you love them every day. And I now say it for 3 months and then skip a day. Why? Because a woman did what I said. After she developed cancer and was in our support group, and she heard me talking, you know, about love, and, oh, I got abusive alcoholic parents, you know, what's the point of love? I said, just let them know every day you love them. After 3 months, she came in smiling. I said, what happened? Oh, I was late for work today, so I ran out of the house, and my parents are in the street screaming, you forgot something. I said, I have all my stuff. What did I forget? You didn't say I love you today. And she said, then we all stood there crying and hugging each other. So, you know, if you're willing to persist, it can get through. And you know, I've seen it. I now use the label CD, which stands for Chosen Dad, because, again, a suicidal teenager said, you're my CD. I said, what are you talking about? I'm a CD. She said, you're my chosen dad. And so there are literally people alive today because I said, I love you and I'll be your new father. Mm. And that shook them up, you know, and they instead of committing suicide, they kept living. And one more little story. A young lady who came to one of my workshops and said, I'm here to decide if I should commit suicide. I said, what's your favorite animal? She said, an eagle. I said, why? And then she described this beautiful bird soaring through the sky and looked at me and said, I'm not going to commit suicide. And she knew she's talking about herself, if you know what I mean, in symbolic form. And I try to wake people up, you know, to who they are. I have to also add, I had one lady in the office. I was trying to get her to, you know, care about herself. And I said, what's your favorite animal? She said, I hate pets and I killed my canary. And I knew I had my hands full with her.
Candace, I had a question. When you realized you weren't feeling the love, what are some of the things you did to learn to feel love?
I didn't realize it until after I started feeling it, that I wasn't feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
I had big issues, and what I did was, quote-unquote, stumble into a form of energy healing called Sunon therapy that addresses first the emotional body, that subconscious mind. And Sunon theory, which I makes sense to me, states that the reason we can't feel love, the reason we feel unworthy, the reason we feel guilty, or the reason we feel helpless, or the reason we feel angry, is that we have made judgments against ourselves at the very deep subconscious level, mm-hmm. and they get stuck in consciousness because consciousness is both an electric and a magnetic energy. The magnetic part is the part we attract from. It's also known as that inner child. And you consciously think things are just fine with you, but at the emotional subconscious level, you are walking around with thousands, if not millions, of self-judgments that affect how you feel, your ability to receive love, your ability to give love. When people say love hurts, they're talking about literally the fact that self-judgment makes emotions or feelings painful. Because it literally constricts consciousness. It constricts the energy of consciousness. It sort of fixes it in one point instead of allowing it to vibrate. Because consciousness vibrates. Everybody has a unique frequency. That's how we kind of recognize each other from lifetime to lifetime. You know, you walk up to someone and you're like, you're not a stranger, even though I don't know that I've ever met you in this lifetime, and yet you don't feel like a stranger. You know, you're recognizing that vibrational frequency. So what I began to do, and specifically, was find and release self-judgment from the magnetic subconscious component of my consciousness, and in its place call in that unconditional love. And unconditional love is simply love with no judgment, expectations, strings, limitations, anything attached to it. When you take those steps, you begin to heal automatically, not just at the emotional level, but at every other level of your being, you know, the mental, the spiritual, and even occasionally the physical. So that's literally, Deb, what I did. Those are the steps I took back when I was 32 and still take today, is to find or allow it to come up. Because the problem is that we can only heal and we can only grow and love to the extent that our fear will allow us to. All right, and I've learned to respect that people come from very different places and they have different levels of fear and different levels of fear about different things. Some issues they'll face courageously and other issues they will cower from. I'm the same. I see that in my clients. That doesn't concern me because you don't have to be perfect to start. You just have to be willing to explore and let go. I mean, if you wait to be perfect till you start, you'll never start on healing and growing, will you? I mean, none of us is perfect. So we start from where we can, we release what we can, and every step forward reinforces the love.
Well said.
Have you had a major illness?
Have I had a major illness?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, yes. In 06, I was diagnosed with an acoustic neuroma. And, of course, that impinges. It's a tumor, non-cancerous tumor, that grows on the cells that protect the auditory nerve, the Schwann cells. If you don't, it's slow growing. If you don't take it out, it visually will cause paralysis on your face and death. All right? So you have to remove it. And unfortunately, it caused my left ear to become deaf. And I, you know, I found this out and I was like, oh, why me? Why me? Why me? You know, what's going on with me? You know, because I know that the physical reflects every level of self, mm-hmm. right? It's a physical reflection. And the invisible healers who hang out around me, one of them said, well, you never expect to hear good news, so why do you need two ears? And that's true. I never expected to hear.
Was that a part of what got you into this?
No, actually, that occurred quite a number. In fact, it occurred 20 years after I got into this.
That's interesting. Because then, what got you into this?
What got me into this was a need, like I said, that I wasn't even consciously aware of. I desperately needed some healing. All right, and I didn't know that, not at the conscious level, and I went to a class that I thought would teach me how to recognize and explore the soul senses, which some people call psychic senses and other people call intuition. Pick your favorite label, I don't care. I was wanting to get into that, but what I got was a healing method called Sunon Therapy that allowed me to begin this journey of growth and self-healing. But I certainly have a long way to go. I mean, I wouldn't consider myself healed and perfect and successful and all that kind of stuff.
You know, that,
well, we all do. We all.
Yeah, that was my next question, in a sense. What gave you the courage to show up?
I thought,
I'm not perfect, not love, not this, not that, and I go there, I'll be a failure.
See, that's what I've found, is that when you're in that much pain, even if you're not consciously aware of it and you can't articulate it, it isn't a matter of courage. It's a matter of necessity. Mm-hmm. And I was in that much pain. I was that separated from my heart, and I truly needed relief and help and some way to articulate and discuss what my real beliefs were, all right? Because they're very different.
Yeah, but why not end your life? Why didn't you commit suicide?
I considered it very much. In fact, I have a dear friend from my childhood who did just that on her 38th birthday.
All right, but that's why. What made you choose life?
What made me choose life? I don't know. Maybe I'm just too stubborn. No, I'm quite serious. I am just too stubborn, or maybe I was too cowardly to kill myself because I didn't have any idea what was on the other side or if there was another side. But
did you feel guidance at all?
I didn't recognize it. I do now. I recognize when I have guidance, which is pretty much all the time. But yes, I definitely felt guidance toward this class. You know, it was like something was pounding on my brain going, you got to go to this class. And the class was great, but I really went for the Sunon Therapy. Okay, and I know that now, and it's great. I love it.
Yeah, it's not a coincidence.
Right. No.
These choices.
No, I don't believe in coincidence.
Were your parents alive at that time?
Yes.
Okay. We'll be back in a minute to continue on the journey.
What makes us different? You! Thanks for listening to HRNRadio.com.
Hey everyone, we have Candace Talmadge sharing with us, co-author of a book, Afterlife Healing Circle. And I think that you know, again, as a physician, when you talk to patients about past lives and things of this sort, a lot of them are afraid to talk to me about it because then I would think they're crazy. But as one patient said to me, now that I learned you're not a normal doctor, I can talk to you. But it's sad that a lot of doctors scoff at these things. Or like that recent neurosurgeon, you know, who wrote a whole bestseller about his near-death experience, which he thought was crazy and never existed. But one day I was on the phone with a friend, and she was listening to how busy I was, or speaking, traveling, and she said, why are you living this life over the phone? And I went into a trance and started telling her what I was seeing. And the way I put it to people is, it's like I was seeing and watching a movie where I was the actor, the lead actor. And to make a long story short, I was a knight, sword in my hand, killing people and their pets. You know, if their dog threatened me, I'd kill the dog and then them. And I thought to myself immediately, wow, maybe that's why I'm a surgeon now and rescuing all these animals, trying to help people with a knife. And I do feel that it isn't, again, that I lived that life, but that the consciousness of that man's life is in me and therefore affecting me. The same way if, you know, I see a four-year-old, and this is on television, in front of a concert orchestra playing a violin. It's like, come on, four, you know, he's got to have the consciousness of a pianist from a previous life. So I think those are things that we can understand as explaining part of our behavior. But I think the key is, how do we choose to use that past experience, that we can use it in a healthy and an unhealthy way? And I think for many, yeah, you could become a doctor for the wrong reasons. You look at all the police killing people. You know, they could be a policeman for the wrong reasons, and acting that way. But what did you feel that this did in your life, and of how it affected your choices and what you are doing today with your life?
Well, I didn't specifically go for any type of past life technique, but what happened was when I started doing the energy healing work, past lives would come up because it was a focal point for where an issue either got worse or originated. So when I take clients into a past life, we don't go just to look at the past life. We go for a very specific reason. There's a there's a self-judgment or an expectation or a vow, which is a promise to self hooked with a self-judgment, and they're very deadly, and they lodge in the heart chakra, and they cause heart problems. So what you have to do is you have to find that point where the person isn't scared enough to go in, and again, it is almost like a movie where the person is the actor. But in the way that I do it through Sunon therapy, you feel the feelings without re-experiencing the pain, because you're in a flow of energy, you're in a flow of love, and that kind of lifts and surrounds your consciousness and my consciousness, and I'm with there as the healer. I'm right there with my client. I don't have to guess what's going on. And what we do, we go for the self-judgment, we go for the release, we go for taking back the energy and power, because when you judge against yourself, you split your consciousness and you throw some of it into the other person or person's consciousness, and they do the same thing, and you can't use this mixed up energy or consciousness. So you have to reclaim it and bring it back to your own energy field. And then, you know, the whole process is freeing. And what it does is it dissolves or loosens patterns of negative feelings and thus patterns of negative behavior. So that's how you choose to make use of the memory of a past life in order to heal and grow in this life.
Do you have any children or pets?
I used to have some pets that I love very dearly, but if you saw how my cat came out, you would be very glad that I did not have human children.
Yes.
I had the world's worst cat. In fact, my spirit guides called her a snot cat. They didn't particularly care for her.
How do you give your love to the world?
I offer hope and healing to the best of my ability. I try to treat every person with as much respect as I'm capable of in any given moment, which of course varies because some days are good days and other days are not so good days. So I just try to respect people. I try to meet them one-on-one. I just offer who I am. I'm pretty direct. I don't try to pretend I'm someone else. And maybe through my books, I have more than one nonfiction book. I have a fiction series. Maybe through that, they can find their own path to greater, mm-hmm. to greater comfort and joy in their lives. I mean, there is a lot of unhappiness in this world, and I know I've experienced some of it on my own. And my hope for people is that they find a path of their own path of peace and joy. It won't be my path, and it won't be yours, Bernie, or yours, Deb, because you will each walk your own path.
Right.
But it will be a path that will resonate with them and will bring them the healing and peace that they want. And that, to me, is like something to cheer about.
Right.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, I think what you're saying is full of wisdom, that because I can't remember all the names, but many forms of therapy in foreign languages interpret it as the path, the way. And I think, again, that we all have to find our way.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, there are times, because I wrote a few poems one day, I learned it from the snow, as crazy as this may sound. I had a struggle going out and exercising because there's been a heavy snow. And the next day, it was easier because I had my own footprints. But a few days later, it had all iced over, so if I missed stepping, I could have broken my leg. So I realized I had to create a new path. And it made me really start thinking about paths. You know, there are times you follow others, others may carry you, you have to start your own. And I think we all have to have the courage to do that and not worry about what others say about which way we're going and what choices we are making. That's why, as you were saying, the hope, the love, all those things give you the courage to go on. And I may add, that word hope is, as a physician, I saw how vital that was, that it has nothing to do with statistics. It has to do with your potential. That's a word I use with people, that if you're willing to make the effort, the potential is there. You can achieve what you'd like to achieve, but you have to be willing and not fear failure, wrong, being judged by others and everything else. And why it's so vital, I'll have to take a break in a minute, but I listen to people say who my mother's words were eating away at me and maybe gave me cancer. So it's so hard to have hope when you grew up with all that negativity. You're a failure, you embarrass us, you'll never amount to anything. I know kids who were even told to commit suicide, or had their parents commit suicide and felt that it was their fault, that they were a terrible child. Anyway, when we come back, we'll get into this, the value of hope and love and all the things that go with it.
Positive enlightenment. All you need in one place, here at HRNradio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Candace, two more test questions. One, I want to get into is, how do you train people? You know, when you say you're an energy healer, how do you help them maintain their energy? And the other is something that I notice, that when you ask people to describe their experience. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean, if somebody came in and said, I have cancer, I say, what's it like to live with cancer? I got a divorce. What's it like to get a divorce? I have a headache. What does it feel like? The words that came out of them related to their life. Now, if they said it's a wake-up call, boy, it's a new beginning, okay. You know, I mean, that they're on the right road now, learning. But when you heard failure, roadblock, confusion, pressure, then my feeling was, okay, what else in your life fits that? And sometimes their eyes would pop open because they immediately knew what was contributing to their lack of health and troubles. And how do you, again, to get back to your energy healer status, how do you help people bring this forth so they can free their energy, you know, not be trapped in this unhealthy situation?
Well, again, there are the specific things I can do in the healing session, such as helping them remove self-judgment. I can also take them to meet their spirit guides so that they can develop a conscious relationship. They have an unconscious relationship with their guides. All right, that's
right.
That guidance you were talking about, beating on my head. And I kind of knew at a very deep level something was going on. But it's nice when it's a conscious relationship and you can really get what it is your guides are trying to suggest to you. All right, because you chose them. They're there for even beyond this physical lifetime. They want to serve the same purpose that you do, but they're sort of like in a waiting room, to use a physician analogy, kind of in a waiting room until you step up and start having that conscious relationship with them.
And let me emphasize that to people. I met an inner guide in a meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Two people have seen him standing in front of me when
mm-hmm.
I've been speaking. At a funeral and at a lecture. And as I say, he's not a normal-looking fellow, you know, the big beard and so forth. So when they describe him, I know who they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that there were many times he would talk to me to help me. You know, I'd hear and still do his words. It could be something as simple as you need to get, you know, nice-looking clothing to, you know, some important event happening in my life. But he was just my guide,
mm-hmm.
and people
are more
afraid to be in touch with their inner guide and that inner wisdom that's not in thinking, but in that intuitive, unconscious wisdom that
mm-hmm.
resides in all of us. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and they're, you know, establishing, that's a specific sort of tool and technique and approach that does wonders for people, because I'm about giving them tools, such as in my book, The Afterlife Healing Circle. The circle is a tool, and it will help you if you need to contact someone on the other side, whether, you know, it's after death or before birth. It will help you. It will also help the people who participate. Meeting your guides is a tool that, once you go through the process and establish that connection and start to use it, there's no stopping you. You know, you'll have the greatest relationship. You know, you put some time and effort into it, and you get a lot out of it. So those are things, because I want to give people, I want to fill people with the knowledge that they do not need an intermediary to connect and touch the divine, however they imagine that to be. They are fully worthy, and they have the capabilities of
mm-hmm.
being their own spiritual master, their guru, and their own connection.
Mm-hmm.
People feel disempowered. They don't get how they're... And they, when that is the case, they become vulnerable to those who stand in the way and say, hey, you have to go through me, or you have to go through my institution.
Right.
I believe that the individual is already fully capable of being consciously connected to the divine.
Absolutely. You know,
I
always say we come from the same thing, made of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question. This is a sentence I read the other day I want to share with you. Speech is silver. Silence is golden. Speech is human. Silence is divine. I loved it. I think that, you know, I'm always talking about the still pond, the quiet mind. I think that's when all these connections happen. You know, when you're thinking, worrying, doing, you don't make that connection to the divine.
Mm.
And that's why I love that. Speech is silver, silence is divine. And even Helen Keller, you know, deaf and blind, said that deafness is darker by far than blindness. It's, you know, the communication. So when you're silent, you can hear. You're able to listen. And that people need to understand that. I mean, there's so many authority figures in so many fields who are all saying the same thing. If you want to know the truth, quiet your mind.
And
then
your body
the communication
talks.
Happens.
Yeah, your body talks to you in that silence.
Everything talks, can then talk to you.
Exactly.
And the reason I also mentioned the still pond, you're also seeing an image then. You know what I mean? You see the truth. You see who you are, rather than if it's turbulence or a dirty mirror. You know, you'd never know. But when it's still, that the silence is what is golden and divine.
Mm.
Yeah. But it's hard for people to stop thinking. But when you stop the intellectual part, then the truth comes forth and the source comes forth and communicates with you.
Well, it's also a question of helping the intellectual part, the mental body, recognize the validity and worth of the other parts of self.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all talk about how diversity and how we have to acknowledge the validity of people who don't think or look or act or speak like we do. That same situation exists within self.
But, well, we have to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like you to elaborate on that.
Okay.
In the sense of the meaning of that word self, what we're seeing. All right. And don't let me forget.
Radio Your Way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back, everyone. Candace, what did I want you to talk about?
The meaning of self.
Okay.
Well, in working with my energy healing clients, I found that, you know, there's sort of, you can divide self into four distinct aspects or parts. You've got that conscious mind, that mental, logical self. You've got the physical body. You've got that spiritual body, which has the ability to perceive energy at the non-physical, all right? Those intuitive soul senses, psychic senses, whatever you want to call it. And, of course, the emotional body. So I call it this inner diversity. And most of my clients, each part of self, is convinced that its way is best. And especially a lot of them have strong mental bodies that, or strong spiritual bodies that want to boss the other parts of self around. So in order to get to that place of stillness that you and Deb were talking about earlier, I take them to a space I call the garden, which is in the heart chakra. It is literally within your own consciousness. And one of the reasons gardens in the physical world so resonate with us is that the garden within is that place where the soul energy anchors in the physical, you know, in the consciousness, the field consciousness that sustains the physical body. And that place invariably is some sort of water. It's a pool of water or it's a water fountain within the garden, and we go there, and then we can bring all of self in and begin this process of reintroducing self to self and saying, you are all aspects of this greater whole, and each one of you has strengths that contribute to the well-being of the whole. It's time to acknowledge and respect each other and love each other, and that's part of the process that I use to help them heal. In fact, my co-author worked with a woman, because we don't do diagnosis, we don't get into that. She never told us that she was diagnosed with multiple personality disorder. But, you know, this is 25 years ago. And Jana simply had in a series of these, what we call garden meditations, we had all the split, because when you have multiple personality disorder, you have severe trauma splitting off aspects of consciousness and keeping them isolated and separated, so they can't communicate with each other. And it used to be quite the thing to kill off those alters, they're called. Well, actually, what Jenna did and what the client did was bring that energy back together and reintegrate it. And it worked. So that is a space where you can be still. That is a space where you can listen to all of yourself, your guides, to God, whatever you want. It is the sacred space within your own consciousness. And that's where I that's another step or tool that I use to help. And I use it all the time for me. Because when I have issues, I know that there's dis-ease between the mental, emotional, and spiritual that is reflected in my physical body. So that's where I go. I say, okay, talk to me. What's going on? So that's where I listen, in this very special space called the garden.
And that's one of the key things, is to speak up and say, talk to me. Show me what you're trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, all the... You might say the great philosophers say that. You know, when you learn from your experience, it becomes a different experience, it becomes a teacher.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And I've had that in my own life. I've seen it with my clients. And, you know, again, it's all about... Because when you learn this approach, the garden, and you can use it whenever you want, whenever you need it for yourself, it brings us back to... You have more hope. You have a sense of, yes, I can. It's not that we don't all need help. Of course we need help. But there are things that we can do for ourselves, that we can accomplish given our own abilities. And it's always, you know, it's great to spread your wings and try a little bit, you know?
Right. When you don't have fear.
Even when you do have fear, all right?
Right. You've
got to say, the fear isn't all of who I am.
But that
it's not everything.
Courage.
It's just an aspect, and it's not
that
real anyway.
Help.
It's a lie. So it's like moving here. I had a lot of fears, but I also had a lot of desire to move. And I, you know, said, hey, let's do it. Let's just do this.
You know, I have to say, I see this happen a lot when people develop a life-threatening illness.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's like, what the hell's the point of being afraid? I mean, I can't help but think of specific people, but one was a woman whose husband left her because she was so fearful, wouldn't even write a check, go out in the rain. I mean, it was just absurd. And then she developed cancer and began to change because, you know, again, I'm not going to live forever. What the hell's the point of staying in the house? And I got phone calls from her children telling me about these life-threatening adventures she was now on, you know, jumping out of airplanes and whitewater rafting and doing things. And now they were scared, what's going to happen to my mother?
Mm.
But I would just say to people, don't wait for a disaster, you know, to get rid of that fear and step out and take a chance. You know, there's little to lose once you believe in yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, this is the season when people think about lots of, they get a little more introspective, I hope, and they, depending on what religion they are, or if they, you know, just are philosophical, you know, they subscribe to maybe there is hope, or why am I here, or what is the purpose of life. And that's basically what our book, the Afterlife Healing Circle, is designed to help. It's to offer hope in a specifically stressful and sad situation when you lose a loved one or you are nervous about the birth of a child. Mm-hmm. So if anybody's interested in more information about the book, the website is www.thehealingcirclebook.com.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking, I have found that humor takes away the fear, too. And I'm a multiple personality and would say things and do things in the hospital that were absurd. But it got everybody laughing. Mm-hmm. And once everybody was laughing, I realized the fear is gone.
Mm-hmm.
We can begin again. And I'd say that also to people. Don't forget humor. The childlike humor. You know, it's not rude, it's fun. And to keep that child in you alive.
Sure.
And thank you, Candace.
Thank you.
You're helping people take a big step
mm-hmm.
in, you know, into life in many forms. So.